No one can keep a secret forever. John and Anne Race worked hard to achieve the American dream.
They were very active in their community, and family was the first and foremost for this couple.
But when secrets shatter the life they built for themselves...
Behind closed doors, there's a darker side. It's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde.
In a flash, their American dream becomes a nightmare.
I said, Anne, you better be careful.
I think his world crumbled.
And no one can believe what this picture-perfect couple is hiding.
I want to be with you. My body is yours.
It just didn't make sense. This was not Anne Race.
This is a case of control, anger, greed, and deception gone awry.
Soon, every dirty little secret will be revealed. It's 1991 in Valencia, California, an upscale community 30 miles north of Los Angeles. And John and Anne Race are enjoying the fruits of their labor. They've worked hard and saved their money to provide their children with all the best opportunities.
They lived in a beautiful home, and their house was very nicely furnished. They lived very, very comfortably.
John is a former law enforcement officer who put his life on the line for more than a decade.
He cared about his community, he cared about the people in it, and he took the time to make sure everybody was safe.
But after 12 years on the force, he returns to his first love, education. It was as an elementary school teacher many years ago that John first fell for a pretty college student named Anne Yoshiyama.
Beautiful young woman, extremely gregarious, sharp, intelligent, well-organized, meticulous about her appearance, the perfect mother and a good wife to John.
Anne also went into teaching, but eventually gave it up to raise their children. Now, she runs a flower business from home to earn extra money.
Anne was just a very dedicated mother. She worked at home full time, and she was just very much involved with the children and the household.
In addition to tending to her flowers and her family, Anne also volunteers at her church.
They were very active in their community, and family was the first and foremost for this couple.
Friends and neighbors just love the Races. They're fun to be around, and who wouldn't envy their deep devotion to one another?
I think they were a good match for each other. They kind of balanced each other out in their personalities. John was a quiet man, but a nice guy, always smiled, and Anne and I got along so well because she and I were kind of the talkative ones, and our husbands were both kind of quiet.
Dear Lord, thank you for this day, and thank you for this food.
John and Anne Race looked like every other American couple. They had children that they loved and adored. They looked very happy.
But looks can be deceiving. Both John and Anne are hiding secrets that are going to tear their lives apart. On April 25th, 1991, Anne fails to show up for a meeting with her pastor. It's totally out of character.
She was meticulous. She was organized. She was planned. But she didn't show up, which was unlike Anne, who everyone can count on.
The pastor asks around and learns that it's been several days since Anne's friends have seen or heard from her. But John assures him there's no need to worry.
We decided that we just needed a little time away from me and the kids.
He says Anne simply took off on an impromptu getaway.
She just simply needed some time to go away for a while. She may be gone a few days.
I think we all wanted to think, what if she had decided to take a trip or just gone back to Hawaii to visit a relative or something?
Maybe she was just unhappy. Maybe she needed to take a break from her husband and her kids.
But after a week without word from Anne, her pastor grows concerned enough to file a missing persons report.
A week ago, just very unlike her from all
the pastor tells police he's worried about Anne because of a secret he can't hold on to any longer.
I want our marriage to work, I want our family to work. And
the race's marriage has hit a rough patch, and they've been seeing him for help working through their problems.
For a priest to come forward and speak to the police about a couple that's coming to him for counseling, this is a real red flag.
But as desperate as investigators are for insight, that's as far as the pastor will go in sharing details.
Obviously, he felt a little reluctant in giving out all the information that was talked about in the counseling session.
I really can't give you any particulars, but...
He suggests police go speak with John directly. Investigators are left to wonder, does the devoted husband know more than he's telling about his wife's absence?
We went and spoke with him at his house. He admitted that they'd gone to counseling. They were having marital problems.
Truth of the matter is that we kind of been having some troubles.
Forthright and candid, John admits that his marriage has been strained as of late.
It was actually, you know, my suggestion that we go to counseling.
He says he and Anne have been arguing lately about money. And he admits to being difficult to live with.
John was very focused on money. He wanted to be a millionaire, worked hard toward achieving that goal.
John's determined to build his family's nest egg and is willing to scrimp and save to do it, even if it means being an ogre around the house.
He was very frugal. He did not want to pay for trash pickup, didn't like to pay for air conditioning costs. You know, there was rules in the house as far as when you could flush a toilet or not flush a toilet.
So sick and tired of how much money that you're spending. This is all I'm giving you. Do not go to the bank. It's been tough, you know.
It was a wake-up call, John says, when Anne told him she was ready to walk. So determined not to lose her for good, he says he urged her to take a vacation, hoping a short break would diffuse the situation. And she agreed.
So what we decided was for her to get away for just a little bit.
She needed some time to think things over. He seemed reluctant to talk about it at first, but he was embarrassed. Who wants to admit that your wife doesn't like you anymore?
Anne called him collect from the airport, John says, but wouldn't say where she was going.
We said, can we see your phone bill? And on that phone bill were some collect calls from a 213 number. The 213 number was LAX, Terminal 1, Los Angeles Airport.
Whatever misgivings police may have had coming into the interview, they leave finding John's explanation very credible.
When investigators are first looking at John, he's a former policeman. He's a school teacher, really giving back to the community, a stand-up guy. So it's natural for them to believe him.
But days go by, and Anne never comes home. Did she really disappear on her own? Or is there more going on with this picture-perfect couple than meets the eye?
Generally with adults in missing persons cases, they turn up. There's a reason for them to go missing. They're depressed, they're having, you know, marital problems, or whatever. But somebody eventually hears from them. In this case, we didn't have that.
Investigators decide it's time to look deeper into Anne's mental state as of late. And when they start digging, they discover the missing mom has been keeping a scandalous secret. Will Anne's sexy secret explain why she would run off?
When somebody's having an affair, everything's running hot and high. Who knows what can happen?
It's been more than a week since Anne Race disappeared without a trace. Her husband, John, is convinced she's just on vacation, taking a break from the tension in their marriage. But the longer Anne remains missing, the more unlikely that seems.
Whether he thought she went on a vacation or not, there were some unusual circumstances that nobody had heard from her.
When no one heard from Anne, not a peep, not a letter, not a phone call, they started wondering, who knows what happened?
Desperate for any clue as to Anne's whereabouts, police distribute missing person flyers and hope against hope that someone recognizes her face or knows where she's gone. Soon reports start coming in that Anne has been sighted in nearby towns.
Over the course of time that Anne had disappeared, investigators received numerous tips on where she might be.
Detective Frank Salerno.
One specifically was a call from a woman that says she was sure she saw Anne. She was positive where she saw her. She knew Anne.
But this report, like all the others, turns out to be a false lead.
They would be checked out as far as it possibly being Anne, and they all proved to be negative. And we never came up with anything.
It doesn't appear that Anne has been injured in an accident either.
Obviously, the hospitals were checked, the coroner's office was checked, and there was no one identified looking like Anne. And in my history in this job, if somebody were to end up in an accident, you usually find those people.
Investigators try to track Anne through her credit card use, but discover there hasn't been any activity in the past week. And although a collect call was placed to the Race residence from LA Airport, there's no record of Anne getting on any flights.
We checked with all the carriers to see if Anne Race's name appeared on their manifesto. Her name did not appear.
Out of leads, investigators pay a second visit to Anne's abandoned husband.
He was well thought of in the community because of his background. He said that he was trying to cooperate as much as he could. It just didn't make sense.
You know where she's at.
So investigators press John for more information.
Truth is,
and he reluctantly admits he's been holding something back, a secret he didn't want anyone to know. Anne's reconnected with an old flame from high school named Bob. And John's convinced they're having an affair.
He said she had a boyfriend they had dated during high school.
The fact that Anne maybe has a secret boyfriend opens up a whole can of worms and can give you many, many possibilities as an investigator.
John grudgingly admits that the trip Anne went on is likely a romantic getaway with her lover, and that his wife may have left him for good.
She was not happy in the marriage and wanted to leave. Obviously, your first thought is, okay, she went off with the boyfriend.
And of course, this would be very embarrassing and humiliating to John. So that may have explained why he was reluctant to speak to anyone about her disappearance.
Image was important to John, and I think he would be embarrassed to have dirty laundry aired, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
But friends don't buy it. They find it hard to believe Anne would abandon her kids.
She doted on her children. She was the epitome of a soccer mom before the phrase soccer mom was coined.
There was no way that she would leave her children. No way on earth.
Then again, sneaking around behind her husband's back doesn't sound like Anne either. If it's true she's having an illicit affair, her friends have to ask themselves, what do they really know about Anne Race?
She went to church. She was a model citizen. But she also had a dirty little secret. She was having an affair. maybe Anne was willing to give it all up to be with her boyfriend.
Police may not be able to track Anne down, but they are able to locate her boyfriend, Bob. He readily admits to the affair.
We were in love.
And then reveals another secret.
She told me that
he tells detectives that Anne was planning on divorcing John. She's even rented her own apartment.
He said Anne wanted to keep the affair a secret as long as she could, but she planned on a future with Bob. They were going to buy a home together and get married as soon as her divorce was final.
When was the last time you heard from her?
2 weeks, and it's
not. But as to Anne's whereabouts, Bob's just as puzzled as everyone else. She never mentioned taking a vacation, and it's unlike her not to have called him. Investigators head to Anne's secret apartment, hoping to uncover new clues to where she might be. Anne has clearly moved out of the home she shared with John. But police are troubled to discover all her personal items are still at the apartment. It doesn't appear as though she packed anything for a trip.
All her makeup was still there. Her suitcases were still there. It just didn't make sense.
Police wonder, is it possible there's another layer to this story? What if Bob's not the only new man in Anne's life? Maybe this affair isn't the only one she's been keeping secret.
If she had one secret, which was Bob, could there have been another secret? Another man?
Perhaps Anne had tired of her fling with Bob and had moved on to someone new. If so, could Bob have taken the breakup badly and lashed out in a blind, jealous rage?
Maybe she didn't know Bob as well as she thought she did. Maybe there was more to him. Maybe he was violent. Maybe he, too, had a dirty little secret.
Investigators need to take a closer look at Anne's lover. Bob seems to lead a quiet life near San Francisco. But is there more to his story than he's told police? Scandalous new evidence suggests Anne's secret love life was even steamier than anyone suspected.
I love you. I want to be with you. My body is yours for the taking.
Nearly a month has gone by since Anne Race disappeared without a trace, leaving behind a family, a lover, and a series of secrets.
It just didn't make sense. This was not Anne Race.
Investigators turn up the heat on her boyfriend, Bob. Does he know something he isn't telling police? Or could he somehow be responsible for her disappearance?
There was a lot more to this than what he was telling us.
Not that simple.
This isn't enough for me.
I love you. Can you just live with that right now?
They wonder, did he hurt her? Could he have been the one?
Sometimes affairs become volatile. Police had to consider the possibility that Anne was playing a game between a lover and a husband. And she might possibly have told Bob that she was going back to her husband. And this might very well have incited Bob to do something violent to her.
Yes.
When police confront Bob, he insists that he and Anne are very much in love.
Look at these letters. I mean, she wrote me almost every single day.
As proof, he hands over more than 100 steamy letters from Anne, written over the last year.
Personal, intimate matters about her sex life. Some of those letters were quite explicit.
I love you. I want to be with you. My body is yours. Everybody else better watch out when we're together. That chemistry, that fire that burned between them, that passion, you saw it on those words right there on those letters. They could not wait to be together, to share that love, to show off that love to the world. They were electric. The letters between Bob and Anne were really steamy. But they also showed an undying love and devotion to each other.
She wrote him or called him every day. We were not shy about talking about any subject. We talked about sex. She had fallen out of love with John. She had mentioned maybe four times she had consummated the relationship with Bob, and she did tell me fairly intimate details about this man. But she really felt that she saw in him more than a sexual partner. I think she really saw him as a soulmate.
Then Bob reveals a stunning new piece of information. He's certain Ann served John with divorce papers before she left.
Do you know when she served the divorce papers to him?
It was probably a week before she disappeared.
And again, he swears he had nothing to do with her disappearance.
He didn't appear to be trying to hide anything from us in any way. And he appeared to be genuinely concerned and upset that nobody had heard from her.
If anyone deserves a closer look, Bob says, it's John Race, her husband. Bob's afraid John didn't take being served divorce papers well and could have hurt Ann. Until now, John's reputation as a teacher and law enforcement officer seemed to put him beyond reproach.
If anyone's above suspicion, it's John Race. One has to remember John is one of them, an ex-cop. So it might be difficult for investigators to really scrutinize John. It's only natural that they would take him on his word.
But now investigators are starting to have their doubts. Why didn't John tell them Ann filed for divorce? What does the ex-lawman really know? Investigators bring John Race in for questioning.
What we have right now is just not adding up.
When they ask him about the divorce, John admits to them what he'd been too embarrassed to reveal before. It's true, he says, that days before Ann's departure, she served him with divorce papers.
She moved out surreptitiously, very carefully, so that John wouldn't know. He went to work, and when he came home, she was gone.
John knows he should have disclosed the divorce earlier, but he was too ashamed. He sticks to the story about Ann going on vacation. But then he drops a bombshell. He says he knew all along that Ann didn't run off with Bob. But the truth is so scandalous, he didn't want anyone to know about it. His wife wasn't just cheating with Bob, John claims. She has another lover, and this one is a woman.
John implied that Ann was a lesbian. Ann was known as a very moral, upstanding, church-going person. So people began to wonder, was she humiliated that she didn't want her kids to know? So she really did run away to escape ever facing those problems.
She wouldn't want anyone to know about this because, remember, she was a model citizen. For Ann, her family, her children meant everything. The secret affair with a woman would be the ultimate shame for anyone to find out.
John tells investigators he thinks Ann has run off with her girlfriend. That's why she's fallen off the map, he says. The truth would be a huge scandal in their community. But John's lesbian twist to the story doesn't quite ring true. Ann's friends knew about Bob, but not a single one had an inkling of her alleged bisexuality. John's the only one who seems to know about Ann's darkest secret. Investigators think it's odd that he can't come up with a single detail about his wife's mystery lover. Police are convinced there's more going on here than meets the eye, and that this man of the law is still keeping secrets.
There's no doubt that Ann had her secrets. But John has secrets of his own.
But to get at the truth, investigators are going to have to resort to desperate measures. Detectives turn to an unlikely source for help.
Most law enforcement agencies don't put a lot of stock in psychics.
Months have gone by since anyone has seen or heard from wife and mother, Anne Race.
Yes, we are looking for that person.
With every lead that falls through, Anne's loved ones doubt more and more that they'll ever see her again. Her frustrated friends push investigators for answers. At a loss, detectives on the case agree to do something unorthodox. They turn to the supernatural and meet with a psychic.
The reason we're here is we're looking for a missing person.
Most law enforcement agencies don't put a lot of stock in psychics.
Do you have a personal item of this woman's that I could hold?
So just the fact that they're willing to listen to a psychic shows how desperate this investigation has gotten.
She saw Anne, that her body was near water, near rocks.
She felt that Anne was dead. She did not indicate who or how she had died. She just indicated that she felt she was in or near a body of water. The way she described that Anne was near some rocks and in water, it sounded like it could have been at Pyramid Lake. I think they did check there, knowing that a body of water is a good place to hide someone, but nothing ever came of it.
With no other leads and no word from Anne, detectives are becoming convinced that Anne Race has been murdered and that they're looking for a body, not a missing person. And as the case becomes a homicide investigation, police must start to consider the unthinkable. What if one of their own committed murder? Could John Race, the trusted teacher and former lawman, actually be his wife's killer?
As a homicide investigator, I want to say that I'm always objective. And it doesn't really matter who your suspect is, but if he's a bad apple, we got to get him out, because that just taints who we are.
John is now an official suspect in his wife's disappearance.
He didn't seem concerned that homicide was investigating this case. We had offered John a chance to take a polygraph, and John refused. He wouldn't even consider it.
He was evasive. He was ambiguous. He didn't give them straight answers.
For a person that had been in law enforcement, you would think that he would be a little bit more forthcoming.
I'm telling you, she went on vacation. Prove that she isn't.
As detectives start digging into John Race's secrets, they're shocked to discover he wasn't the hero of the department he led people to believe he was. Not long before he retired, $6,000 in bail money went missing from the department safe, and John was suspected of thievery.
There had been an investigation as to some funds that were stolen from where he worked. However, it was never proven, and that case went nowhere, and shortly thereafter, he did retire on a medical retirement.
John left the force under a cloud of suspicion. But even if he had taken the money, does that mean he's capable of murder? Anne's best friend says yes. At her wit's end, Deanne reveals a host of secrets she thought she'd take to her grave. Secrets like John's tendency toward rage.
She and I were very much confidants. We told each other our deepest secrets.
I just wanted to talk to you about a few things.
She would sometimes say she was afraid.
I don't love him, I fear him.
You know, yes, he might have a temper and he might yell, but I never saw John be abusive.
And he's mean and he is temperamental and he's not who you think he is.
But I wasn't sure I always believed her.
But now she fears Anne was telling the truth.
You don't have any respect for me. This is my house.
Anne told her that she was afraid John had anger issues.
I'm tired of the way you treat me.
In fact, he would sit there and he would take his guns and polish them in plain sight to intimidate Anne.
According to Deanne, John also had a dark side in the bedroom.
He was much more interested in sex than she was and was actually forcing her to have sex every night.
That house was a living hell for Anne. He controlled her. He made her do whatever he wanted, no matter what.
So the picture that's starting to emerge of John is very different from the image he's trying to portray.
Deanne tells investigators that this abuse drove Anne into the comforting arms of her lover, Bob. And that as Anne grew more and more desperate to leave John, she began playing with fire, brazenly flaunting evidence of her extramarital romance.
Anne wore a necklace Bob had given her. At first, she wore it under her blouse, but eventually she decided to get brave and wear it outside her blouse.
I saw her wearing it, and I said, Anne, he might notice. You better be careful, because he'll wonder where that came from. Oh, no, he won't notice. So, and I said, you might be surprised. He might have noticed and not said anything to you. But I truly believe he knew there was something going on.
Given John's rage and control issues, it's possible the affair could have triggered murderous impulses. But detectives believe that's just part of it. With John's reputation for being a cheapskate, they suspect his true motive for murder has more to do with the bank than the bedroom.
When we looked at the bank records, they had joint accounts and they had an excess of $150,000 in bank accounts. So they were pretty well off.
But investigators suspect that when Anne finally moved out and filed for divorce, John started to panic about potentially losing his life savings.
He would lose half his money, half the house. He'd have to pay child support. And as frugal as he was, I'm sure that he did not want that to happen.
Detectives believe this risk could have been enough to push the penny-pinching ex-lawman to use lethal force against his own wife.
For John, image, status, prestige was everything. Having that perfect life, that mansion on the hill, was his ultimate dream. He was gonna do anything he could to get it. Anything.
And with John now a suspect, more of Anne's friends speak out, confirming investigators' suspicions.
One of Anne's church friends revealed that Anne had once said to her, I'm afraid John's going to kill me, and if he does, you will never find my body.
She told her friends, John warned her, if you leave me, I will kill you. I will hide the body so that no one ever finds you.
I kind of dismissed it as being, oh no, she's just exaggerating. I feel bad about that.
The picture of what was truly going on inside the race house is starting to become brutally clear to police. All John's stories about Anne, her lesbian lover, and her mysterious vacation appear to be lies. Investigators are certain she's dead and that her husband is the only person with both the means and the motive to kill her.
In this case, you had three motives. You had one, the fact that she's filed for divorce. She was going to move out. Two, you had the fact that he had quite a bit of cash in the bank, and he knew by California law he was going to lose half of it. And the third one was the fact that he knew about her affair. So either one of those would have been ample motive for murder. You put the three of them together, and you've really got an explosive situation. A lot of people have been killed for a lot less than that.
At one point, they asked him point blank, did you kill Anne? And his response, instead of being no, no way, I wouldn't kill my wife,
His answer was, I didn't do anything wrong. In his mind, it was okay to get rid of her. Otherwise, you would challenge us and say, no, I didn't kill her. Help me find her killer. So that was very telling to us.
John reminds investigators about that collect call from the airport before Anne vanished. But detectives now suspect the former lawman went to the airport and called the house himself to cover his tracks.
Well, the more we talked to him, and the more it appeared that he was anticipating what we would do as investigators, trying to set up alibis. There was no doubt in our mind that he had placed that call.
If it was anybody who knew what law enforcement officials would be looking for, it was John. John knew how to pull off that perfect crime.
Even with his secrets revealed, detectives fear John may now have the upper hand. How will they catch a killer when there's no proof a murder has even been committed?
He knows police procedure. He knows what they're looking for, and he can always stay one step ahead of them.
Can detectives outsmart one of their own when he's already several steps ahead of them?
No witnesses, no crime scene, no evidence, and no body. John was gonna get away with murder.
Although detectives are convinced that John Race killed his wife, they have no way to prove it.
There were no fingerprints, there was no crime scene, there was no blood, there were no footprints, nothing to point to Anne having been murdered.
With each passing day, it seems this former lawman is getting away with murder. The case seems unsolvable. Until Anne's pastor reveals something he thinks police need to know.
He knew John had anger issues, control issues. He knew Anne was afraid of his anger.
Anne's pastor still won't disclose everything that went on in the Race's marriage counseling sessions, but there is something he can tell them. He met with John Race soon after Anne's disappearance. And he noticed something strange. Something he thought little of at the time, but now fears is proof John's done something horrible to his wife. John had scratches across his face.
He had scratches I thought was possibly made with fingernails.
He remembered that the last time he saw John had scratches on his face. That happened around the same time that Anne disappeared.
What could have happened is these were injuries as a result of Anne trying to fight back. It fit into a scenario developing in our mind as to what could have happened.
But scratches alone won't convict John of murder. Investigators need something more. They need to prove John had the opportunity to carry out a murder on the day of Anne's disappearance.
We were trying to establish a timeline. He could dispose of the body and nobody would ever find her.
Police find exactly what they're looking for when they bring in the Race's daughter, Joanne, for questioning. She was likely the last person to see Anne alive, around 4 p.m. on the day she disappeared.
Anne left, told the kids she was going to get some food. John left right after her.
We were all going to have dinner together,
but she didn't come home.
Joanne says her mother never returned, and her father came home with cold food.
And she asked, why didn't Mom bring the French fries? And he told her, well, Mom's on a trip.
Did John's excursion to pick up dinner give him the opportunity to kill his wife and hide her body? Joanne tells investigators she doesn't know how long her father was gone.
She couldn't say he was gone 15 minutes, 2 hours or whatever, but she did recall one important thing.
Joanne was on the phone with a friend while she waited for her parents to come back with dinner. And when investigators track down Joanne's friend, she gives them the key piece of information they've been missing. She and Joanne talked for more than 2 hours.
And it was dark out when I hung up with her, so it had to be at least
her friend
2 hours.
Was saying that it was already dark when they were talking. So in our timeline, we can say he was gone at least 2.5 hours when he finally did show back up at home.
John had ample time to murder his wife and dispose of her body. But where Anne Race now rests, no one has a clue. It's highly unusual to try someone for murder without physical remains. But detectives will be damned if they're going to let a former law enforcement officer get away with killing his wife.
A murder trial can't happen unless the person is dead. So the police began to compile facts to show that Anne indeed was gone, dead. She never used her credit cards. She never used her bank account. No one ever heard from her. She had never returned to the apartment she rented when she moved out.
It's enough to convince prosecutors that there's no doubt Anne is dead. And with her impending divorce, her affair, John's scratched up face, and his lies about her vacation, it's also enough to charge John Race with murder. Prosecutors present him as a controlling, image-conscious tyrant who wasn't going to let his wife divorce him for another man and destroy his charming facade.
John wanted the world to believe that he was the perfect family man. But John Race had a secret rage inside of him, and that rage could boil over if he felt he was being made a fool of. He was not going to be embarrassed. He was not going to be humiliated. He was not going to be cheated on.
It's enough to convince a jury that Anne Race is dead and that her husband is the reason why. John Race is found guilty of murder in the first degree and is sentenced to 25 years to life.
For Anne to leave John for another man wasn't going to happen. For John to have to shell out money in a divorce wasn't gonna happen. For John, image and money meant everything, even if that meant murder.
In the end, the man who once enforced the law wound up on the wrong side of it and will likely spend the rest of his days behind bars. But John Race continues to hold on to his secrets from prison, refusing to tell anyone what he did with his wife's body.
That means that John is still controlling this thing from behind bars. Only he knows where her body is.
This is a case of an extremely cold-hearted individual. This is a case of control, anger, greed, and deception gone awry.
I think this is a terribly tragic case because Anne needed love. She was looking for a new life with true love in it. He told her that there would be serious consequences if she left him. She didn't go to the police, and she was never seen again.
Secrets can be very devastating. They can cause people to act in ways they never thought they were capable of. Few people knew what was really going on behind closed doors in the Race household. But in the end, he couldn't keep his secrets hidden forever.